In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh yeah, we're going to talk movies. We'll do that. Alan Adams is here from The Main Edge for Pass the Popcorn. Happy Monday, Al.
And to you as well, sir.
How was your weekend?
I was pretty good. Pretty good. We actually took a brief trip down to Southern Maine. Our oldest nephew had his first communion on Saturday.
Nice.
And so we went down, and there was a little celebration after that. And then we made our way home, and that was about that. But it was nice. It was nice to get out of town for a minute.
So you took him out for shots?
Oh yeah, no, like it's like you have never seen a 9-year-old that drunk.
Uncle Al. We kid. All right, before we talk movies, America wants to know, what's the squirrel update?
Okay, so here's the deal. As I said, we went out of town. Our squirrel guy, which, by the way, I will clear this with him before I start trumpeting his name to the airwaves, but he's been wonderful throughout this entire ordeal. If he so chooses, I will happily spread his name for all those
yes.
in their critter disposal needs. So we had a couple get caught after we last spoke on Wednesday, and then we came back on Saturday from being out of town, and again there was a squirrel in one of the traps, and it was a squirrel, and we thought that squirrel was no longer with us. Like, we were like, oh man, that squirrel is not moving. Because, you know, they've been in the house, and like the only way for them to get food is to come out, but they haven't been coming out. And so they're obviously all very, very hungry, very tired. So this one is sitting in the cage. The guy comes, sets up the ladder, goes up, and is like, you know what? It was one of the funniest things. He's like, you know what? I think I'm going to take this one home. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm gonna take him home, and I'm gonna let him loose in the forest out behind my house. He's earned it.
Wow.
You know what I mean? I'm just like, oh, okay. Yeah. So it's like, a battle well fought, like a tip of the cap to the opponent. Like, I appreciate that. And we thought, you know, this exhausted squirrel is out there. This has to be the last one. It has to be. But as I was saying to you off air, it appears that the eaves of our house are a GD squirrel clown car, because they just keep coming. They just keep coming out. And it's like every time you're like, this has to be the last one. We go to bed at night, 2 o'clock in the morning, scritch, 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 scritch. I'm able to more or less ignore it. Sheridan, a lighter sleeper, usually has to abandon ship, because they have set up operations in the eaves that are basically directly outside our bedroom walls.
And you said Stella has been remarkably cool about
She doesn't
this.
Seem to care, which, you know, considering that a car door closing halfway down the block is enough to send her into utter apoplexy, like, it's weird that she's not bothered by any of this. But one imagines they've probably just had some quiet late night discussions and been like, look, man, you steer clear of my thing. I'll steer clear of yours. It'll all be fine. But yes.
Maybe the warmer weather will drive them outside.
I honestly don't even know at this point. Like, it's one of those things where when the guy whose job it is to trap these things is like, I don't know, you're just like, well, okay, I guess we'll just we'll keep the traps up. We've got a couple of points of entry covered, so that does not appear that there's anywhere else for them to go in. And so we're just going to sit here and hope for the best. We'll cross our fingers.
They stored up well for the winter, so they're just hanging out now. I can't go outside, but we got food.
I guess. I don't know if it's like some sort of like, it's like March 2020 in there or something. Like, they're all just like, it's just like piles of like ramen noodles and toilet paper, and they're just waiting for this whole thing, riding it out. I don't know. But I will, of course, keep you posted as things develop. But as of last night, there was still somebody in there.
Now, see, when you told me, my first thought when you said your squirrel dude was taking that guy home, I thought it was for dinner. That's a good one. I think I can make a decent stew out of that.
No, it's just, it was so funny to me, because again, like, you know, I can't imagine, you know, you, it might seem counterintuitive, but I imagine a certain degree of empathy is important for someone who operates in this sort of job.
Yeah.
And so to just sort of have him just kind of acknowledge, just be like, oh man, like you are a smart one. You have earned a slightly better release point than these other ones. So we'll take you home and set you loose and good luck to you.
Because the others, it's the breakdown lane of I-95. Good luck there, Rocky. All right, Alan Adams from the Main Edge with us now to talk movies. Three of them on the docket. Where should we begin?
Let's start with this one just because I'm not entirely sure how to talk about it. So there's this movie, it's called The Survivor. It's currently available on HBO Max. It's Barry Levinson directed, stars Ben Foster.
Oh, wow.
And it's the story of a man named Harry Haft, who was a light heavyweight boxer in the late 1940s. But his whole deal was he was promoted as a survivor of Auschwitz. And so this is the story, and the primary story, it takes place in that sort of 1948, 1949 range where we're seeing him as a boxer, but also dealing with the unprocessed trauma of his ordeal, trying to track down people that he lost track of when he was in the camps. And then we also get flashbacks to his time there, where we learn that he was at the behest of an officer named Schneider, played brilliantly by Billy Magnuson, was basically forced to fight other prisoners for the amusement of the German officers. And last man standing gets to keep breathing. That was basically the deal. And he spent 6 months, like that was his life. And so we see some of that. We also see some parts set in the future, 1963, where we see an older Harry. Although it's I can't really say any more than that without spoiling. But just know that there's a third timeline that is operative within this context. But again, we spend the majority of our time in 1949 when Harry, in an effort to gain enough publicity to get his name out, so that the people he's seeking, particularly it's specifically his former girlfriend, can see his name and know that he is alive. He tries to get a fight with Rocky Marciano, and as part of that, he agrees to tell his story to a journalist played by Peter Sarsgaard, who's very good in this as well. It's a wonderful cast. Foster's trainers are played by John Leguizamo, Paul Bates. Danny DeVito has an absolutely killer, like, two or three scene sort of, it's more than a cameo, but it's not a huge part, but he's in and out and just crushes. And it's basically the story as we watch this guy try to find ways to deal with this trauma, to process this trauma in a time when you weren't supposed to have emotional problems. Like that was indicative of some sort of weakness. He's bottling these feelings up, and the pressure explodes out in at inopportune times and in unfortunate ways along the way. I'll leave it at that plot wise, but it's a really great movie. Hard to watch, both in terms of subject matter and the frankly haunting performance that Ben Foster gives. Like, he's someone who I think is wildly underrated as an actor. Like, he's someone who has been very good in a lot of different things at this point, but for whatever reason, he's never had that sort of breakthrough to the quote-unquote A-list. And so instead, we get, I mean, phenomenal performances like this one. And again, it's a physically transformative role. He lost, I think, 60 pounds. Wow. to play the version of himself in the camps, and then bulked up and got in shape to play a boxer. A lot of physical transformation. But it's almost, and it's so remarkable. He's so good that you almost wonder if he needed to do that, because he's able to bring so much just with you know, with vocal inflection, with his eyes. Like, he's just such a talented close up actor, and you know, and Levinson, I think, takes advantage of that by giving us a lot of those shots. The you know, it's the aesthetic really works. It's very strongly delineated between the time periods. The boxing sequences are particularly strong. One gets a whiff of like New Hollywood, like Raging Bull, like Scorsese type, like that sort of like close up, not quite jittery, but like really intense sort of proximity type shots that really work. And it's just a wildly compelling story, a real story, a true story. Foster's obviously the foundational performance, but the supporting cast is excellent across the board. Just again, a really, really good movie that I will probably never watch again.
Mm. Now, it's been a while. What's the last thing that Barry Levinson directed?
You know, I don't like. I was looking back, and it's been ages, and I feel like, oh, I wish I could remember, because I feel like the last one was not well received.
Mm.
But I can't off the top of my head remember what his last movie was.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of the last movie of his that got any buzz, and I don't know, is it all the way back to Wag the Dog?
I mean, that's one that kind of keeps coming up and stuff like, and that's what, 25 years ago?
Yeah.
Like, it's, oof. But you know, he's still out there doing what he does, and again, like this is certainly a rebound as far as in terms of quality filmmaking. But as I said, it's tough watch.
All right, more to talk about. What's up next?
Let's talk about quite a very drastic 180 here. Let's talk about a movie called Crush. It's currently streaming on Hulu. It's an original. And I'm on record as being a big fan of love stories. I love love stories. I love coming of age stories. I love high school set stories. And this is all three of those. And so it's really in my wheelhouse. And it is continuing, frankly, a very, I think, a very positive and progressive trend from Hulu. In that they are making a point of making these types of movies, very straightforward, mainstream high school rom-com that centers same-sex relationships. Mm-hmm. Again, we'll get to a point sooner rather than later, it's starting to feel like, although, you know, if certain folks have their druthers, who knows? But we're going to get to a point where you don't have to mention that, like, specifically, because this movie is not about that,
right?
Like, that's the thing. It's not, you know, there's no sort of, it's not a coming out story. There's no sort of tragedy about built into the relationship. It's just goofy high school kids doing dumb stuff and making jokes that I don't always get, and generally just dealing with the sort of unrequited love that comes with being in high school. Our lead is a young lady. The character's name is Paige, played by Rowan Blanchard. High school student looking to find her way. She's a budding artist, so she's trying to get accepted to a summer program at Cal Arts. She's got a really strong support system. Her mom is extremely, almost embarrassingly sex positive with her daughter. Her mom, played by the wonderful Megan Mullally, who's wonderful here. And she's got her best friend, Dylan, played by Tyler Alvarez, always by her side through thick and thin. But her biggest issue is her crush. She's been enamored of her classmate, Gabby, played by Isabella Ferrer for years, but can't bring herself to make a move. And anytime she's in proximity, her brain shuts down and she says and does ridiculous things, which is something that anyone who has ever been in high school can relate to. In a misguided effort to get closer to Gabby, Paige decides, after having spent her entire academic career being a non-athlete, decides to go out for the track team. Where Gabby and Gabby's twin sister, AJ, played by Oli Caraval, they're the co-captains. And so the coach puts AJ in charge of making Paige, you know, passable as a track athlete. So they start, you know, working, you know, they start working out together. They start getting to know one another and they start having a really good time together. And so we wind up in this place where it's, you know, Paige is left sort of wondering, you know, if maybe her crush is on the right person. And so she's dealing with those shifting feelings. And okay, so that's the A plot, but there are a couple of subplots that really need to be addressed here. There's one where Dylan, Paige's best friend, and Dylan's girlfriend, Stacy, played by Tila Dunn, they're running against each other for student council president. And Paige is crafting their campaign, both of their campaign materials. They are very much enamored of one another and supremely supportive of one another's campaign, even as they're running against one another, which is it's a very weird sort of thing, but it works. Like it's very offbeat and very charming. And there's also this high school also has some sort of basically you know, high school Banksy that shows up and like puts like pun based murals on the school walls, and you know, and so there's this big quest to figure out who this mural artist is. And there's a lot of suspicion that it is our budding artist Paige, which plays into other developments as far as the story goes. Look, I was really pleased by how this movie played out. Because again, as I said, I love everything that this movie is. And I also really enjoyed the fact that you could essentially... And again, there are certain fundamental things that would have to be altered. But this is a story that would work no matter who the couples were, like who the relationships were between. And I think that's what we should be striving for. And it's really nice to see that a company like Hulu is willing to make the investment to try to make these movies happen. And again, I'm not naive. Like, the reason that Hulu is making these movies is because people are watching these movies.
Right.
And, you know, it's about, you know, they are targeting an audience, and that is okay. Like, that is absolutely like what they do. It's just really nice to see acknowledged the fact that there is a considerable audience for this sort of movie. And particularly, when it's made this well, because this movie is very funny. It's very sweet. It's very charming. The performances, I didn't recognize a lot of the young actors, but they all felt very real, very natural. Dropped in some, you know, folks like Megan Mullally, Megan Buteau, Michelle Buteau, sorry, is in this as well. Like some really gifted, older, you know, quote unquote adult comedians filling in some of the supporting parts. But ultimately, it's a movie about high school, and it's a movie that feels, if not, like, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but like it's one of those things where it's like there's enough there where I'm like, it has to be at least somewhat similar to the high school experience, because I remember a lot of this stuff and I'm old. So but yes, Crush was a really lovely time.
All right, and finally, tell us about Memory.
I forgot.
Yeah.
No, it's funny because look, it's another Liam Neeson old man action movie.
Oh dear.
You know, and it's like, and you might be thinking, if you're out there listening, you're like, man, didn't he just talk about one of these? The answer is yes. Yes, I did. Because Blacklight, the previous Liam Neeson Jerry action thriller, came out in mid-February. So it's wow. Like, yeah, no, he's really churning through them. Look, it's basically, it's the same movie with like, you know, they basically pull different details out of a hat, and then they make, you know, it's like, his name is Alex Lewis, and he is, oh, is he a cop this time, or is he a bad guy? Oh, no, he's a bad guy. He's a trained assassin. Okay. What does he do? Well, he kills bad guys. He also kills good guys. He mostly kills bad guys, but he has lines he won't cross. He's an assassin with ethics.
So it's Mad Libs.
Yes. but this time, the added twist is he apparently also has some version of early onset dementia, so he forgets stuff. Inconvenient for a hired assassin,
well,
you might say.
Yeah.
Which, okay, like all that stuff is fine, but then they make it a little icky when they sort of our big sort of conflict is built around an FBI team, a task force led by a ridiculously haired and kind of sweaty Guy Pearce, investigating like child trafficking, and it's like why like this is a dopey like action movie, like why are we exploiting this very real issue in such a way? But that's neither here nor there. It gives Liam Neeson a chance to show us where his line is. And then, and then there's some overlap between him and FBI agent. The guy's name is Vincent, but I mean, it's just like Guy Pearce, looking like an extra from Almost Famous. our assassin is hired to kill some guys in El Paso, where he's from, because you know what I think when I hear Liam Neeson talk?
El Paso.
So he goes back home to El Paso to do this thing, and then only to find out that, he's being asked to do something that he simply cannot do, which means that now there's a whole bunch of other people who are out there after him, and it's up to Liam Neeson and Guy Pearce to maybe join forces, maybe not, it's unclear, and take down whoever it is that is responsible for all of the bad things that are happening. Again, it's not particularly clear who's doing what and why until the very end, and you're just kind of like, oh, so that was why. Okay, I guess. I also forgot, apparently. But yeah. And there we have it. Look, I'm not going to sit here, and this movie is better than the last one. Like, that's a low bar, but it's better than the last one. Leaving aside the ick factor of the sort of central conflict, but that doesn't mean it's good. Like it's reasonably well crafted. They've done a much better job of minimizing Mr. Neeson's very very obvious shortcomings as an action star. So that's good. You've got a pretty overqualified second banana there in Guy Pearce. You wonder whatever happened to that guy. Like, you're just like, oh man, you were in Memento. Are you okay? but yeah. And then, there's some shooting, a bunch of shots of Liam Neeson looking pained, either just a full on frontal shot or him looking at himself in the mirror, feeling pained. There's a lot of looking in the mirror, in this movie, because that's how you remember, apparently. I don't know. Mm. He takes some magic pills that supposedly hold off the onset of early onset Alzheimer's. I didn't know that was a thing, but apparently, if you're an elite assassin, you can get your hands on pretty much whatever you want. Again, look, I went and saw this movie, I was one of three people in the theater, that's. Well, Rich, that's probably about right.
Oh, dear. All right. Hey, I have to ask you, are you, I know you're watching, are you pulling for Matea Roach on Jeopardy?
Oh, man, I'm here for the age of the super streak. Like, I love it. Like, it turns the game into something that feels more like watching sports, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's good. I think there are people out there who have their resentments with regard to these sorts of things. They are the ones you would expect, and their problems are the problems you would expect them to have. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think she's charming. I think she's a weirdo, and I think those are the people that keep people interested in the game.
Yeah,
I think Jeopardy has benefited greatly, particularly in the aftermath of the whole debacle with Mike Richards and all that stuff. I think they have benefited greatly from having some contestants come on who, are able to dominate in this way. And again, as someone who stood there, like, it could go sideways at any time. Mm. Like, and the fact that it hasn't is indicative of skill and knowledge for sure. But also a healthy proportion of luck. And that's something that we can't, sometimes you're eventually going to get one that you don't know, and whether that's in your first show or your 50th, like, it's going to happen. And it's just a question of enjoying the ride while you're there. And she seems, maybe more than anybody, to be enjoying that ride very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, she goes for 20 in a row tonight.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
See you on Wednesday.